We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, welcome into Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB, an absolutely gorgeous morning here in Kansas City and across the Midwest. I am your host, Brad Porter. Rudy Salazar is running the board. Jed Marshall is jumping in during the show as well. Thanks to Kenitra Pulliams from Spectrum Sports, who joined us in the last second talking KU basketball and also the Big 12 SEC Challenge. Is anybody hyped for that? They sell T-shirts for that? I'm not sure you sell a T-shirt for the Big 12 SEC Challenge, because I'm not sure you would sell any. Coming up later this hour at 10:30, my good friend Matt Wheeler, who works for a national television outlet, works behind the scenes putting together information for the NBA draft and also covers the NBA behind the scenes. We'll talk about the draft prospects for Devontae Graham, Svi Mykhailiuk, Michael Porter Jr., other guy, Trae Young, and some other people as well. And that'll be some good stuff. And also we'll touch on Celtics-Warriors tonight, which will be live here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. So that's at 10:30 with Matt Wheeler. At 11 o'clock, Nick Jacobs will join us from 41 Action News. We'll talk Chiefs, holding on to their defensive coordinator, Bob Sutton. We'll also talk Super Bowl and the National Football League overall. And at 11:30, Jared Sutton will join us, former Missouri Tigers basketball great. We'll talk Missouri, Mississippi State, and all of college basketball. Jared does a great job scouting for the NBA and does TV work for the SEC Network. As far as what else is going on today, it's a big day here at Sports Radio 810 WHB. It always is. After last weekend, we had the AFC and NFC Championship games. We got the Super Bowl coming up next week. But today, we're going to take you right up until noon with our show, and then we will hand it off to Jayhawk Game Day with Joshua Briscoe, which is always a lot of fun to listen to. Josh does a great job. At 2 o'clock, the Kansas Network pregame show takes over. And then at 3:30, Texas A&M at KU live here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And then we cap off the night with the NBA. Boston Celtics and Golden State Warriors. Coverage begins at 7 o'clock. Right now, we're going to get into Royals baseball with my good friend, former right-handed pitcher for the Kansas City Royals, Al Fitzmaurice. Fitzy, how are you doing on this fine Saturday morning?
I'm doing great. Sounds like you guys are going to be a little busy today.
Absolutely. We always are. I always like to have great people on the show.
You got stuff going on.
Yeah, well, so do you. I mean, we're going to talk Royals here, but I know you're headed down to FanFest downtown today, which, just judging by the pictures I saw on Twitter last night, looked like people were having a blast.
Yeah, it's always a good time, and it's kind of, signals the fact that hopefully the weather's going to change for one thing. And, baseball's coming around again. The Chiefs are unfortunately finished again, and, onward and upward, and, sports doesn't stop in Kansas City, so it's a good time, and, pretty soon we'll hear the golden tones of Denny doing the first game, and all will be well in Kansas City.
Yeah, the baseball. They'll do a couple of spring training games, too, to kind of set the tone for the season. We're talking with Al Fitzmaurice, former Royals right-hander, talking Royals baseball and talking FanFest. A couple other things on the FanFest. There was a period, Fitzy, about maybe 10 or 15 years ago where the Royals kind of distanced themselves from the alumni, and I think there were some hard feelings, and the Chiefs went through this too when Scott Pioli was in town. But I think both teams now are doing a much better job in embracing their history and getting guys like you and Willie and all the guys involved with FanFest, where you have all the current players, not all of them, but a good number of current players, as well as some of the retired players as well. And it's a good feeling for guys that saw guys like you play. We get to have a good time, and all the kids get to enjoy the young guys. So I think it's a great atmosphere at FanFest.
Yeah, it really is. And yesterday on the stage, they actually had three of us, Dave Wickersham, Tom Bergmeier, and myself, who actually played in the inaugural 1969 series, our 69 season, and Ryan LaFever hosted it. And, it was just Ryan was asking questions. We took questions from the audience. And, it's just hard to believe it's been 50 years. Like, that's a golden anniversary.
50 years of Royals baseball.
Wow.
And
yeah.
You know what? Aside from that period in the early to mid, even into the late 2000s, the early to mid 2000s, aside from that dark period with the 100 lost seasons, this has been a pretty successful 50-year run for an expansion franchise.
Yeah, it really has. You know, the Royals actually, you know, we were competitive early on in the birth of the Royals. And, you know, within, you know, 7-8 years, we, you know, we were contending for, you know, championships, league championships, division championships, I should say. And, of course, in 76, we, you know, we took the West and lost to the Yankees in that dreaded Chris Chambliss home run. But, you know, the Royals have always had, I think, good leadership. They had a period of time, again, you talk about the dark years when we were losing 100 games and, you know, things got a little crazy. But, you know, very soon thereafter, you know, a new regime basically took over and got the ship righted again. But, you know, going back over the years, you know, Cedric Tallis got it up and going and did a really great job. Joe Burke. And now, you know, there's been about two or three other GMs in between. But now, you know, with Dayton Moore, I mean, this is a general manager that really gets it. And, you know, he embraced, from the time he got in, he embraced the alumni and, you know, got us back into the fold. And, you know, I just put something out on Facebook about, you know, the other guys. You know, the three of us did the little sit down, but the other guys that helped get this organization started. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is you kind of forget the names, the Mike Hedlunds, Dick Dragos, Wally Bunkers, Joe Keos, and all these guys that came from different organizations, different walks of life to form a team and you know, get this run started. And it was really very cool.
You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I'm Brad Porter. We're talking with former Royals right-hander Al Fitzmaurice, who I've had the pleasure of working with for 25 years, I guess it is.
Yeah, wow.
I was thinking about this, Fitzy. We'll get into Lorenzo Cain here. I was thinking about this when the trade happened. There are some positions that teams do extremely well. In the case of the Chiefs, it's always been running back. I've gotten to know Mike Garrett over the last couple of years, who was on the Super Bowl team, 65 toss power trap. Super nice guy, him and his wife and their kids, and gotten to know him a little bit. But going back to Mike Garrett, and then you kind of go forward to the Christian Okoye, the Barry Word, even Harvey Williams was good. And then you move into Priest Holmes and then Larry Johnson and Jamal Charles, and now it's Kareem Hunt. The Chiefs have always done running backs really well for the most part. For the Royals, the position they have always done very well is center field. And Amos Otis, I got to see towards the end of his time in Kansas City, was terrific. Willie Wilson was fantastic when he kind of took over for AO. Then you go into Johnny Damon. You go into Carlos Beltran, who to me is still the most gifted all-around player I've ever seen, not named Mike Trout, but all-around player who plays a premium position. So it was Carlos Beltran. And then, okay, who's going to play center field? And then you trade for Lorenzo Cain. And he's right in that group. He's elite, as elite as all of those guys. And a premium position, an elite player, that's a big loss for the Royals. I'm happy for Lorenzo. 5 years, I didn't see that coming. $80 million, didn't see that coming. But I'm happy for him and his family that he got to get to free agency and get that contract. But that is, of all the free agents the Royals may lose, that may be the hardest to replace.
You know, the only person I was ever sad to see go from the Royals was myself. So, you know, these other guys, they're going to be well compensated. So, you know, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. But Lorenzo Cain was one of the good guys, too. Just a great guy. And you know, talking about FanFest and FanFest past, you know, I've always taken my grandsons, Connor and Kelly, down, and Lorenzo used to spend time talking with them, and, you know, I've got pictures with them. Just a good guy. And you hate to lose not only the talent, but, you know, the quality of people that these guys are. You know, Haas is like that. Moose, you know, it's just a good bunch. And it's difficult looking ahead, seeing what they're going to have. But, yeah, you're right. Kansas City Royals have, once they got Otis, They had a great run of center fielders. Even Brian McCray was a great
Brian McCray. Gosh, fielder. Brian's going to be mad at me. I forgot. Sorry, B-Mac. And I just texted him the other day to congratulate him. He's got a new job as a baseball coach over at Shawnee Mission East. I believe he's going to be an assistant coach. So, B-Mac, sorry about that.
B-Mac
yeah.
has a new job every other year.
Well, good. So, that means people want him.
That's what we like to say.
Well, see, at Mizzou, and I'm not going to get too far into this, but Brian McCray at Mizzou was his classification meant he could help coach the team but couldn't be on the bench for games. And he was finishing his education as well, so probably wanted to be back here in Kansas City. But I digress. So here's what the Royals have to do now, because Lorenzo Cain's been talked about for a couple of days, so we have to advance the story. The Royals have to figure out what to do in center field. And we're talking with the former Royals right-hander, Al Fitzmaurice, by the way. So figuring out what to do in center field. Do you slide Alex Gordon over to center field and find a piece to play left field? Do you there's talk that they may again look at Raul Mondesi as an option. I know that it was an experiment last year at different times. Do you try to find a center fielder? To me, Paulo Orlando is not an everyday center fielder. So what do the Royals do at center field right now, as the roster stands, because they don't have a center fielder?
Yeah, really, really good question. And you know, the bat is what you know is lacking, or what still is developing for Mondesi. And you know, that's a position that you don't just get somebody that can run the ball down. You've got to have that. That's an offensive position as well. There aren't too many center fielders in baseball that can hit. And the bats without Cain, without Hosmer, without Moustakas in the lineup, you know, this is just my opinion. You know, I don't know that you can risk a bat like his in the lineup right now. I think they're still looking. But, you know, long-term, he might very well be the answer to center field, because he's a gifted athlete. One of those guys that can probably play anywhere. And so, you know, that's an option. Gordon sliding over, I don't know that Alex has the speed to play center field. And, you know, I don't know that I would take the very best position player and move him somewhere. You know, they've had experiments before. Some have worked, some haven't. But, I mean, Alex Gordon is the absolute best left fielder in all of baseball. And, yeah, you need, you know, hopefully you'll have that year with the bat that he's had, you know, in the past, not the recent past, but in the past. Because Alex Gordon, again, is a tremendous athlete and a guy you want on your team. So, you know, I don't really know what the answer is right now. I don't, you know, I don't know that it's Orlando. Again, you know, not a productive bat. So I don't know where they go with this, to be honest with you. You know, they've been hoping Bubba Starling for years, but again, he's kind of has had an anemic bat since he signed. So it's a toss-up. Can't really help you on this one, Brad.
You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I am Brad Porter. We're talking with former Royals right-hander Al Fitzmaurice. And I'm looking at the depth chart for the Royals at center field. According to ESPN.com, Paulo Orlando is listed as number one. To me, that's a definite no. Billy Burns is listed at number two. To me, that's a no. Terrence Gore is listed at three. That's a no. And Bubba Starling is listed at four. Now, here's the best case scenario. This is what I think I would like. No, this is what I would like to see. This is what I think a lot of Royals fans would like to see. I think you'd like to see Bubba Starling get to spring training, absolutely murder the baseball. He can play center field at the major league level now. He's been at that level for two or three years defensively. He hasn't been able to hit. Go to spring training, mash the ball, force Ned Yost and Dayton Moore to put you on the roster and earn a job, because, as he said, it's my time, and he's got to go out and do it. And the balls in Arizona fly different. It's a very different game in Arizona there. But best case scenario, in my opinion, is Bubba Starling goes and crushes it in Arizona and wins a roster spot and eventually wins the job, because you don't, like you said, there's not a lot of other options.
Yeah, those four you mentioned, you know, Orlando was clearly the pick. But if you remember, Mondesi coming out of spring training won a spot down there. And then, you know, once the season started, couldn't hit. You know, Billy Burns, you know, not much he can give you. He's got legs, and to me, that's pretty much all.
Right.
Gore can't hit. Just can't hit. to be honest with you, I was a center fielder that could run anything down but couldn't hit. So that's why I started pitching. You know, Bubba, they've been waiting forever and ever, but, you know, again, he's, you know, you got to hit when the season starts. And I think that we're going to see how valuable Kane really was. And they, you know, they got him out of three slot because, quite honestly, you know, again, your three slot's your RBI guy. You know, it's been a Bonds in the past. It's going back. It's been a Mickey Mantle. It's been a Mike Trout. And, or he, you know, Trout gets early in the lineup because they want to get as many at bats as he can. But that's a run production. And, you know, those four guys, I don't know that any of them, you know, are going to drive in more than, you know, 50, 60 runs. And that doesn't work in this lineup right now.
We're talking with the former Royals pitcher Al Fitzmaurice. He's going to be down at FanFest for the Royals in downtown Kansas City today. Great day to get out and enjoy that and get some autographs and check out all the new gear that I'm sure they're selling ahead of the 2018 season. We covered center field, and now the other news that came out this week is that the Royals have agreed to terms with Alcides Escobar to come back and play shortstop again. It's reported to be in the neighborhood of $2.5 million. He made $6.5 million last year, so that's $4 million less. He plays basically 162 games a year. The one reason I agree with the signing, I'm not going to say I like the signing. Don't get my words wrong. I don't like the signing because the Royals should have developed somebody else by now. But I agree with the signing in that you're getting a guy who can play 162 games. You're a team that's not going to compete for a division championship. It's relatively cheap. And if someone like Raul Mondesi steps up and shows that he's ready to play every day, making Alcides Escobar a backup is not all that expensive. So, like I said, I don't like the signing, but I agree with the signing.
Yeah, I do too. And the thing is, from a pitcher standpoint, you know, who do I want to see at shortstop in the entire organization? And it's Alcides Escobar. I mean, he's... You know, Freddie Patek, a friend for 45 years, but Alcides Escobar is one of the best shortstop. Well, he's to me, he's the best defensive shortstop the Royals have ever had and one of the tops in all of baseball. And, again, it's very affordable. Hard to believe 2.5 is affordable. But
that's peanuts in today's baseball.
Yeah, it's very affordable. And, you know, again, this free agent market is just bizarre. And, you know, Nolan, his name never came up as far as anybody, you know, showing any interest.
Never.
A lot of interest in shortstops because there's a lot of young guys, a lot of guys that swing the bat better than the Alcides. But he gives you that. And, again, you have no idea what you're getting with Mondesi. And so I like this signing.
Yeah.
You know what's funny, Brad, and it's kind of, you know, treating at the end of the season – that Jason Vargas, winning 19 games, said, "I did it. Jackpot." And his name, I have not heard his name mentioned.
No, I never hear it come up, and I would love to have Jason Vargas back. In fact, you're leading me to my next question. You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Brad Porter. We're talking with Al Fitzmaurice, former Royals right-hander. So you lead to my next topic here because I've got a couple of minutes left with you. The starting rotation for the Royals, as it stands now, barring a signing in the next couple hours before I go off the air. So your starting rotation right now looks to be Danny Duffy, Ian Kennedy, Jason Hamill, and then some combination of Nathan Carnes, if he's back and healthy, Jake Junis, or you could have guys competing such as Trevor Oakes, who the Royals traded for this offseason, Eric Skoglund, Miguel Almonte, if he ever gets his head on straight, has ridiculous talent. But there are three guys you would say are locked in, but there's a lot of competition for two spots, and I'm not sure I'm all that jazzed about who's going to fill the last two spots. In fact,
yeah,
I'm not. I'm just going to say that. I'm not jazzed about who they have.
Right, and it's a to be honest with you, there's jobs to be won in spring training. And, you know, I mean, Duffy's a premier pitcher. He really is. His record, you know, he had that one big year. And, you know, his record doesn't necessarily show the type of pitcher he really is.
You know, he's capable of doing some great things. And again, we don't know how healthy Duff has been. Last year he pitched with issues, but you know, he could be a one or a two for a lot of teams when he gets, you know, back to, you know, being healthy, consistent, what have you. And actually from there down, you know, Kennedy, you know, way under 500 last year. You know, what's he going to bring? And there's games he's pitched very well, but he gets in the fifth or sixth inning. And, you know, I know this is
you,
a
you can set a clock
market
right
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, what's going to happen? But he knows how to pitch. From that point on, man, if you're a young starting pitcher in the Royals organization, this is a great opportunity. And, you know, I have no answers for that either, other than the fact that, you know, there's going to be, you know, some surprises, some people stepping up and taking jobs. And, you know, we'll just see what happens. But we, you know, we'll still have some, you know, some power arms that we can do some different things with. But even with the bullpen, what are we going to do there?
Yeah, that, and I don't have time to get into that one. We need a full hour to do that, Fitzy, and I know you got to run
exactly
to get down to FanFest in downtown Kansas City. So enjoy that and shake some hands and sign some autographs. And hopefully we'll all get a little bit excited for 2018. How
all
about
right,
that?
Brad, always all right, great spending time with you, Ben.
All right, Fitzy, thank you. All right, uh-huh, that's former Royals right-hander Al Fitzmaurice joining us here on Sports Saturday. Fan Fest going on all day today, downtown Kansas City. Have some fun down there, go through that. Mick Schaefer was playing all the games yesterday on 41 Action News. I don't know if he was actually doing work, having somebody film you playing games, but it's a good time. The Royals do a good job with that. They always do. All right, coming up next, we're going to bring in Matt Wheeler after this break. We're going to talk college basketball and the NBA because Matt Wheeler does a great job working behind the scenes for a major television station, putting stuff together for the NBA draft. So we'll ask him about Devontae Graham, Svi Mykhailiuk, Michael Porter Jr., Trae Young, where these guys might go in the draft, where they might fit, and also the big game coming up tonight, Celtics and Golden State Warriors at 7 o'clock, which you can hear live here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. So all that is coming up. I am Brad Porter. You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Soften the tone a little bit, bring it down, because we're going to talk some NBA here and college basketball, so get a little excited when we do that. Still got a full show. We're going to take you right up till noon here. At 11 o'clock, Nick Jacobs, 41 Action News, is going to join us, talk about the Chiefs and retaining defensive coordinator Bob Sutton. We'll also talk Super Bowl and the National Football League. At 11:30, Jared Sutton, former Missouri Tigers basketball great, will be with us to talk a little Missouri, Mississippi State, as well as other games going on today. And then at noon, Jayhawk Game Day with Joshua Briscoe. At 2 o'clock, the KU Network pregame show starts. At 3:30, Texas A&M and KU live here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And then we cap off the night at 7 o'clock with a little NBA, Boston Celtics, Golden State Warriors. Speaking of the NBA and round ball, joining us now, my good friend who I worked with for many years at the channel formerly known as Metro Sports. When I knew this kid, Matt Wheeler, coming up, he was so enthusiastic and excited about working in sports. Loves the NBA, knows entirely too much about European basketball leagues, which is good. Always had the dream of working for a big TV station. Matt Wheeler, thank you for joining us. How the hell are you, my friend?
Brad, how you doing?
Fantastic. Now, I'm going to ask you, I was texting with you this week about coming on. Can we say who you work for?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Matt Wheeler works for ESPN. And, Matt, you work behind the scenes putting together, you work on NBA shows, and you're now
just college basketball.
Just college basketball.
But I am working on the NBA draft.
NBA draft.
This summer.
Well, that's perfect, because that covers everything for us now, because players at KU and K-State and Missouri and across the Big 12 and SEC are going to have to get ready for the draft. So let me start off with this, and this is the reason I texted you this week. Last week, our show was dominated by the story Billy Preston leaving KU.
Yep.
Because the investigation by the NCAA kept dragging on, and his mom said, we need a decision. We got this offer to go play in Bosnia. I don't know anything about the Adriatic League, but this team in Bosnia called, and I apologize if I mispronounce it, BC Ikogia.
Yep.
Is this a team or a league that has a reputation of developing NBA players? Is it a good league? Is it a competitive league? Is it a trash league? What kind of league is this, and what kind of team is Billy Preston playing for?
Well, first of all, they don't really have the track record in the past of producing big-name players. The team, Kia. But the Adriatic League has had 16 players drafted in the last 4 years, which is the most of any European league. Now, the reason why they've had that is because all the young players get stashed in this league because the bigger name teams in Europe, your Real Madrid's, your Fenerbahce's, your CSKA Moscow's, don't play young players. It's completely different in Europe than it is in the United States. Everybody wants to get younger in the U.S. In Europe, if you're a young player, they don't play you. They don't play you. They want to play the veterans. For instance, when Brandon Jennings did not qualify academically to play at Arizona in college, he went and played in Italy.
Which was, for him and his family, was an awful experience.
Exactly. He didn't start one game in Italy. He came off the bench. He averaged 9 points per game. Now, fast forward a year, he goes, gets drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks, and in the first month of his NBA career, he drops 54 points in a game against the LA Clippers. So, you're talking about a guy with extreme talent playing in one of the better leagues in Italy, and he could not start a game. That's the way young players are viewed in Europe. Now, however, the Adriatic League has this, somehow they've decided, it's probably because they're not one of the top tier leagues, but they try to bring in young players, and they do play the young players. For instance, the big reason I think Billy Preston made this move is because of a guy named Jonah Bolden. Jonah Bolden was the first pick of the four players that were drafted last year out of this league in the NBA draft. He went 36th overall, so the second round, sixth pick, to the Philadelphia 76ers. He played for FMP, which is a team in Serbia that plays in the Adriatic League. But Jonah Bolden is very similar to Billy Preston. Bolden played 1 year at UCLA, didn't like it, and he went overseas. He gets drafted last year, and then the Sixers decide to keep him in Europe this season, especially since he's a second-round pick. They keep him in Europe. He's playing for Maccabi Tel Aviv this year, so he's out of the Adriatic League. He's playing against much better competition. Still a backup, but still developing. So that's why I think the Prestons decided to go this route.
All right, we're talking with Matt Wheeler, who works behind the scenes at ESPN covering college basketball and preparing for the NBA draft. So for Billy Preston, this the thing that I said last week is the kid needs minutes. He needs to be seen, and you have to get minutes. Practice isn't enough. You need minutes. So from what you know about the Adriatic League and playing in Bosnia, this is a good move for Billy Preston because they play the young players, and he will get the minutes, and he will get seen and scouted.
Right. He's on a team that's 6-11 right now in the Adriatic League, tied for eighth place. They're just barely hanging on to a playoff spot. So, and again, you get relegated in these leagues in Europe. So he's holding on to a playoff spot, which is so valuable to teams in Europe because you want to stay in your top tier leagues. That's how you get more money as a organization. So he's instantly going to be the best player on their team. I was looking through their roster, and the only other guy that I even recognize is Dominique Artis that played at UTEP. And he was a good college basketball player, but the rest of these guys I've never even heard of before. So, it's a good pickup for them. He's going to be their marquee guy, their main attraction. So he's going to get plenty of touches, and he's going to go – and the other thing that will help him, especially when you talk about the draft – he's going to go up against other top prospects from this league that are getting looked at for the draft. In particular, a guy from Cedevita, which is a team from Croatia. Cedevita, one of the better teams in the Adriatic League, a guy named Dazanin Musa. He's supposed to be a first-round pick, lottery pick, a big guy that Billy Preston should get the guard and should play against in matchups when they play Cedevita later this season.
Are you listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB? I am Brad Porter. We're talking with Matt Wheeler, who works for ESPN behind the scenes covering college basketball and getting information gathered for the NBA draft. Billy Preston, a pretty good picture we got painted there of where he's going to Bosnia and getting minutes and getting seen. Well, let's bring it back to some of the local kids here as the NBA draft is only a few months away. I read, and I'm gonna forget it. I should have wrote it down, but there was a former NBA player who's now an analyst, was asked, okay, who's the top talent, aside from a player from outside the United States who may get drafted number one overall, who's the best talent we're looking at right now? Is it Marvin Bagley III, which a lot of people think is number one? He's the number one guy. Is it DeAndre Ayton from Arizona? Could it be Muhammad Bamba from Texas because he's got the height and shot blocking skills? And this player analyst said, "You didn't mention Michael Porter Jr. He's my number one."
Jay Williams
said it. Thank you. I knew you would know that. Jay Williams said Michael Porter Jr. is my number one. Is that the vibe you get, especially considering the injury and he may or may not play any college basketball?
I think, you know, you talk to so many people and you get so many different answers. I've been looking at mock drafts like crazy, and it seems like every single one has a different player. But that also shows how good this draft is. I mean, this potentially could be, I'll put it on a high pedestal, this could potentially be like the 2003 NBA draft, where you've got LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Carmelo Anthony, all going in that draft. I mean, this potentially could be that level. Now, I've seen Ayton in person. I've worked an Arizona game this year, and he is every bit as good as people think he is. He is a man. He should not be playing college basketball. But that's a discussion we will have for another time. But obviously, there's lots of tape already out on Michael Porter Jr., so a lot of people feel that him missing the season really doesn't hurt him because scouts have been scouting him for years now. Bagley, he's thin, but he's got such a versatile game, so talented. And obviously Trae Young with the explosion he's had. I don't know if Trae Young is in the conversation for the number one pick because everybody's kind of loves the big versatile guys. But obviously, Trae Young is going to be somewhere in that top five discussion. And then, Brad, to go with the overseas guy, I know this week ESPN.com mock draft has Luka Doncic.
That's the guy.
Even though we just talked about how overseas teams, the bigger name programs, don't play younger players, Luka Doncic is 19 years old. He's the starting point guard for Real Madrid. The reason he plays at his young age is because he signed with Real Madrid as a 15-year-old.
Wow.
And came up through their junior system. He blew through their junior teams through 2 years, and he's been starting for them since last year. And he leads the EuroLeague in scoring. He's the youngest player to ever lead the EuroLeague in scoring. So, and you think the EuroLeague has had very good players that have come over to play in the NBA later in their careers, with guys like Manu Ginobili.
Right.
So, what Doncic is doing is incredible. I mean, he's 6'7", can really shoot the ball, but he's going to struggle when he gets to the NBA because he's not played against players. He's not played against other 6'7 wings, 6'7 incredibly athletic wings, which he will not see until he gets to the NBA. So it'll take him time to adjust, but he's definitely in the conversation. There is five guys in this conversation for the number one pick.
And Trae Young is drawing a – by the way, we're talking with Matt Wheeler, who works behind the scenes at ESPN, compiling information for the NBA draft and also covers college basketball. And Matt's a great Kansas City kid, by the way. I should have mentioned that off the top.
That's okay, Brad.
The pride of both Raymore and Peculiar.
That's right.
Raypak High School. So with Trae Young, he is – and I'm going to get to Devontae Graham and Svi Mykhailiuk here in a second. But Trae Young is drawing a lot of comparisons to Seth Curry.
Yep.
And Seth Curry has even been asked about Trae Young, and this is the evolution of the game now with three-pointers. I know in my case, my 13-year-old likes to shoot three-pointers. All the kids love to shoot three-pointers, and they're getting better and better and better at it because they do it all the time. When I was a kid, the three-point line had just kind of come in, and if you could make a three-pointer, you were kind of like,
Kristaps Porzingis. You were a unicorn.
Right.
You had one guy on your team who could make threes. And if he wasn't a starter, you would bring him off the bench if you were trailing because he could shoot threes. Now all these kids can do it. And Trae Young is drawing those comparisons to Steph Curry. Is that a fair comparison, analysis, or are there games, are there differences that we should be paying attention to?
Well, I think I had Trae Young a couple weeks ago. I worked the Oklahoma-West Virginia game. And that game really kind of started to show where Trae Young needs to get a little bit better. Obviously, physically, his size, he needs to get better. But Steph Curry had the same issues when he was in college. You know, he was a smaller guy. But I will say that Trae Young is a much better ball handler and passer right now than Steph Curry was in college. I would probably say Steph Curry was probably a better scorer, at least. Let's just say he was a better bad shot maker than Trae Young.
Because he's still
right
got that
now.
Weird shot.
Right, exactly. But, you know, I think in this age of basketball, and it all kind of started in the 2000s with what Mike D'Antoni did with the Phoenix Suns, with Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire, Sean Marion. They went smaller. They went more screen and roll. They let Steve Nash get in space and make plays.
And run 100 miles an hour.
Exactly. And then that's what's developed into the NBA. That's what's leaked down into college now, the AAU level. High school teams are doing this now. And, I mean, it's what they do overseas where they run four out, one in. And that's – everybody wants to shoot threes and light it up now. And your conversation, you're just saying about shooting threes. I mean, that's just – that, it's just going to continue to grow. You're going to see 6'11", 7-foot guys continue to try to stretch the floor. Everybody wants to stretch the floor now. But that's all because of the D'Antoni system when he had Sean Marion at 6'8", playing power forward in the NBA because he could stretch the floor and shoot threes. But he could also play pick and roll with Steve Nash. He could roll to the hoop. And then even Amari Stoudemire could hit a free throw line jump shot. And the other shooters, Joe Johnson, that Phoenix had back
That's
then
right.
to all stretch the floor and shoot threes and shoot, you know, a million three-pointers a game. And it's just the way basketball is heading. I'm not saying that the two post players at once on the floor is really going away. And your prototypical power forward from back in the day that was 6'10", you know, big and strong, but not quite big enough to be a center, is now a center. And if you are shorter than that, but you can't step out, you know, basketball is going to be tough for you to make it far in now.
Are you listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB? I am Brad Porter. We're talking with Matt Wheeler from ESPN. He's a Kansas City kid. He covers college basketball and compiles information for the NBA draft. And I like talking NBA because I think it's as good as it's ever been. And I grew up in the Magic Bird era that kind of evolved into the Jordan era, and I think it's ridiculously entertaining right now, and my kids love it. Speaking of three-point shooting, Svi Mykhailiuk and Devontae Graham both went mm-hmm. through the pre-draft process last year, and the information that was given to them led them to believe it was better to go back to Kansas for their senior seasons. Now, Svi Mykhailiuk has turned into the perhaps the highest – I'd have to double-check today because it changed from day to day – one of the highest percentage three-point shooters in the country. So whatever information he got back leads me to believe he was told, you better start hitting more of your threes and being more consistent. You can't be hot and cold. And he has had times this year where he's been hot and cold. But now, since conference play, he is hitting at a better than 50% clip. Where does Svi Mykhailiuk kind of sit right now in terms of the NBA draft, how high he might go or who might need a player like him?
Well, Brad, I agree with your analysis of him. I've done two Kansas games this year, and he's really improved his shot selection, should we say. But the thing is with him, he's still kind of floating around. And look, the second round in the NBA draft is as difficult a thing to try to predict as ever, as anything, because so many teams are going to spend – at least half the second-round picks probably are going to be taken of guys from overseas that only average 4 points per game that play on some team that everyone has never heard of.
Right.
Because they want to stash the second round picks and they want them to continue to develop. So trying to project the second round is difficult, and that still seems to be where he falls. I've not seen any mock drafts where he's in the first round yet. Now, he's got good size. He's got great shooting ability. And like I said, he's improved his shot selection. So that's all going to help him. He's going to need to continue that through the season. And the system that Coach Self has adapted to this year, more because they kind of have to, is the four out, one in. And that's really what's making him look so good. But that's exactly what teams want to do in the NBA, is have four guys on the outside and only one guy in. So they're really kind of getting to see him in more of a pro-style look, which I think will only help him this season. The only thing to me that hurts him is, again, that this draft is so deep, and I think it's going to hurt Devontae Graham too, is that it's going to be very difficult for these guys to get into the first round. I really like Graham. I think Graham's a very good point guard. I like the way he distributes the ball. I think he takes the right shots when he needs to, but he is not afraid to set his teammates up as well. But it's just going to be extremely difficult because there's so many good players. And I know these guys don't really have a choice, especially Graham, since he's a senior, that he's got to go. But I think we've had such a record of underclassmen declaring here these last couple seasons that a lot of underclassmen this year, if you're not being talked about as a lottery pick, you really need to consider coming back to school. Just because the second, if you're a second round pick, there's no security.
Nope. And a lot of those guys, a lot of the guys in the second round, particularly the back half of the second round, don't even make the opening day roster. They go through training camp and they're just cut.
Exactly. Now, what does help is the two-way contracts the NBA instituted this season. So now you have basically a 17-man roster, and you have two guys that you can send down and keep them in the G League, and you can call them back and forth, kind of like baseball, Triple A and the big leagues. Now, that kind of helps. But, again, you're going to be making G League money. You're not going to be making NBA money except for the 10 days or 7 days or whatever. So, I don't know. A lot of, over 100 underclassmen are probably still going to declare for the draft like we've had the last couple seasons. And, Ski's also a guy, too, even if he is a second-round pick, with him being from Europe, he may get a better offer. Even though he may be a second-round pick, he could potentially get a better offer from a team in Europe.
Yeah,
that's now seen him play. And he may jump overseas and just have that NBA team hold his rights. Kind of like Sasha Khan did that played a key.
Right.
Remember, he was a second-round pick 10 years ago by the Cleveland Cavaliers. He went over and played for CSKA Moscow for like 9 years.
Right.
And then came back to the NBA, played 1 year, won an NBA championship with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and then retired.
Yeah.
So,
and that's what I always tell the young kids. Don't focus so much on the draft if you're not a lottery pick, and don't discount Europe. You and I have a friend, Quentin Day, from Paseo High School, went to UMKC. He's been in Europe for 11 or 12 years, piling up money, living a great life. He's been to 50 countries. Don't overlook. All right, final thing for you. This is Matt Wheeler from ESPN, Kansas City native, Ray Peck grad. My kids love the NBA. My oldest is Golden State Warriors. My youngest is Houston Rockets. James Harden last night. I called him down late to watch the end of the game. James Harden's got a chance with the game on the line, and then he airballs a free throw that he was trying to doink off the iron.
Yep.
So the younger one likes James Harden. The older one, you'll appreciate this before I let you go. My older son, the 13-year-old, they've got a athletic event coming up, and the theme is, for their team is the 1980s. So he ordered a John Stockton Utah Jazz jersey. He's got the headband he's going to be rocking.
The original pick and roll king.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. So kids, I think kids are growing into a different NBA than I did. And it's awesome. It's entertaining. And Matt, I want to wish you good luck covering college basketball and getting ready for the NBA draft. And perhaps as we get closer to the draft, we'll have you back in and give us your latest analysis and picks. How about that?
Anytime, Brad.
All right. That is Matt Wheeler. Works at ESPN behind the scenes covering college basketball and getting ready for the NBA draft. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk a little Chiefs football and the National Football League. At 11 o'clock, Nick Jacobs from 41 Action News is going to join us. And then at 11:30, back to basketball with Jarrett Sutton, former Missouri Tigers basketball great. You're listening to Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Back on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. Brad Porter, your host. Rudy Salazar is running the board. Jed Marshall's jumped back into the studio. All right, Jed, we're going to talk Chiefs with Nick Jacobs coming up in the next segment. But how about the Pro Bowl? It's coming up tomorrow.
Should be exciting.
We saw the skills competition this week. But what about the I'm not a big Pro Bowl guy.
No, the Pro Bowl is awful. It's the worst out of all the professional sports all-star games, in my opinion. I'll watch the NBA all-star game before I'll watch the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, scoring. NHL, their final score is usually, 10-9, something like that. So what? I guess what's the incentive? We were talking about the incentive to watch the Pro Bowl. I don't like it because it's not really a game. I would rather they do something else more entertaining, do some kind of show or something. But when I was a kid, we didn't have as many games on. We didn't have Sunday Night Football. We didn't have Thursday Night Football. Didn't have the Sunday Ticket was still kind of in its beginnings. And so I would watch the Pro Bowl because I got to see players I never got to see during the regular season. But I don't watch. Zero interest.
It's pretty bad. All those guys are there just to hang out and get paid, go to Orlando, which they get ripped off of a trip to Hawaii.
I know. But if I was a player, I'd be like, I wanted to go to Hawaii.
Right. Back in the day, I used to watch a little bit when I was younger because it was after the Super Bowl. It was like the goodbye to football. I guess this year, your only incentive is it might be the last time to see Alex Smith in a Chiefs helmet.
Oh.
And a weird looking AFC jersey.
Yeah, they kind of look like the Chiefs color rush jerseys a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. The Pro Bowl, all in all, it's a huge turd.
What about the skills competition? Alex Smith didn't do so well, did he?
No, he did not. He was having trouble with the 15-yard pass to Keenan Allen where you have to tiptoe and catch it. He was not having very much success with that. Better than last year, though, where he could not throw a dodgeball. Have you seen that gif where he just spikes it into the ground?
Yeah.
That was pretty bad.
Yeah. Who was somebody Alex Smith got knocked out of dodgeball, I think, without ever throwing a ball this year,
right? Yeah, he just ran right up to the line and got drilled.
He didn't want to be part of that.
He didn't want another gif.
Yeah.
That's the theory.
Well, kudos to Alex Smith, Kareem Hunt, and all the Chiefs Pro Bowlers who flew Southwest Airlines. Kevin Keatsman reported that this week. Could have rented a private jet. I would have if I had their money. All right, coming up next, we're talking NFL and Chiefs with Nick Jacobs from 41 Action News. You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB.